Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
All right, welcome everyone. So, what do consumers, policy influencers, and business leaders all have in common? Well, yes, they all read the Washington Post, obviously. However, there is more to it than that. My name is Amelia Simpson. I lead the audience insights team at the Washington Post, and we're here today to share learnings from the third year of our Power Index research with Kantar. So for the last 3 years, we've worked with Kantar to survey these three groups: consumers, policy leaders, business leaders, and we asked them to look at 29 issues and assess them through the lens of three parameters. How important is this issue to society? How relevant is this issue to me in either a professional or personal capacity? And finally, to what extent do I have the ability or the tools I need to even do something about this? We've done this research for 3 years, and if you scan the QR code, two things will happen. You'll be taken to our landing page where you can download this year's research for yourself, styled as a playbook, so that you can drill into the specific audiences, specific issues that you care about, and we have some recommendations on how to navigate those barriers your audiences face. And you'll also receive an exclusive deal to subscribe to the Washington Post Digital Properties. So, get those phones out. Usually we don't want to see phones during a panel, but in this case, we can endorse it. So three things have been true in 3 years of research. Leaders still feel ill-equipped to tackle the challenges that are most pressing. We find that consumers, the things that are most important to them are issues that are emotionally relevant. And when you ask people about technology, they consistently deprioritize it compared to these emotionally relevant issues related to personal security, their own happiness, and you know, cost of living. So here to help us unpack those trends and new trends from this year, we have a wonderful panel. We have Mike Pogson, Executive Creative Director, Together, Phoebe Connolly, joining me from DC at the Washington Post, our Senior Editor of AI Strategy and Innovation, and Ibu Ozgoc, Global Head of Brand and Digital Marketing at Vodafone Business. Thank you all so much. So Phoebe, a little bit of setup before I have you kick us off. We found again this year that there are gaps between the issues that business leaders tell us are most important to them and the issues that they say that they have the ability to solve for. And when we followed up to say, well, you know, what barriers prohibit you from being more effective? We found that misinformation was once again the most significant barrier these leaders face. So this is not a new challenge for newsrooms. And I would love for you to share your insights on how newsrooms tackle misinformation.
Yeah. I mean, at the core of, I think, any journalist's mission is to ensure that we are telling an accurate story. And it's not just enough for us to have an accurate story. We really want to ensure that it is sourced really thoroughly. So in small ways, one thing that I love that papers have done for a really long time is not just present a fact, but to talk about the number of people we talk to and where they're based. So if you read a big sort of unpacking about something that happened in Washington, look, there'll almost always be a paragraph where we'll say, the Washington Post talked to 12 senators, you know, 8 members of staff, you know, all of these people across, you know, 6 different agencies mm-hmm. in order to bring you this picture. And I think that the other thing in this current moment that we find ourselves in is that tackling misinformation also has an education component. It's not just ensuring that we're telling accurate stories, but it's also helping our readers understand what journalists do, how we perform our jobs, the standards we hold ourselves to. That sort of storytelling around misinformation, as well as telling the truth, I think are two really important things for journalism right now.
Yeah, that takeaway of setting context for your audience feels very relevant outside of the newsroom as well. Mike, I would love to hear from you from a creative perspective in an information environment marked by distrust. You know, you have consumers who are more discerning, more suspicious, maybe less receptive to your message. What does that mean for creatives? How do you break through?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I think it's an enormous opportunity for creatives, actually. Actually, that's kind of me as an audience. I am a little bit less sort of trusting. I'm also a creative. I don't know if the two are correlated, but, you know, if you start with digital, it's an enormously powerful medium. Of course it is. For me, I think there are also other sides to it. I find it a little bit throwaway sometimes, very noisy and obviously wide open to manipulation as well. What I like are brands that as a minimum don't contribute to that. Ideally, ones that actually in some way, you know, generate some way of helping people to navigate through it. Intel, for example, recently did a really interesting piece of work where they have developed some kit that can identify whether something is fake video or not, based on very subtle changes in the skin tone when your heart beats. Really, really interesting. So it's useful, you know. I also find the bridge between digital and physical quite interesting too. So, you know, an ability to make something more tangible often leads to a place where it's easier to trust. So Led by Donkeys, if you're familiar with them, did some really interesting stuff where they plucked out tweets from politicians and sort of plastered them. They transposed them into the real world, plastered them on billboards, made it very sort of hard to ignore, you know. So I think it'll be interesting in future years how brands start to show up in that physical environment. And then you have the sort of do versus say, you know, what you say you're going to do and what you're actually doing. I love a product demo ad. I love them. But I don't think the product as an endpoint is enough anymore. I think it's about how you get there. And I think it's about what you stand for as a brand and what you are really doing to sort of actually demonstrate, you know, your commitment to that. So if you think about IKEA and their commitment to sort of a more circular economy, really interesting work they did with the trash collection where they found bits of their own discarded furniture, rescued them and put them back into the market, you know. So it's straight away adding a dimensionality to the brand that takes it beyond just flogging you some more chest of drawers. Really interesting. And then finally, you're sort of, what are you saying? And I'm a big advocate actually of starting with maybe what you don't want to say about the brand. And that sounds really controversial, but actually, if you can sort of find the thing that's less expected, it immediately cuts through those barriers that people have to believing what you're saying. So, you know, there's a reason why the Avis ads, car rental ads from the 60s are still remembered, is because they were quite vulnerable and sort of transparent about being number two. Mm. Now, obviously, you have to connect that to a product benefit. In their case, they try harder, right? But it gets you to a place where people are much more sort of ready to trust you more quickly. So I think, sort of be real, be useful, be transparent, be a little bit vulnerable. They will all help you get to a place where, you know, you can generate more trust.
Yeah, I think that that first takeaway really of in this time of digital, bringing things back to reality, actual physical experiences, I think we're seeing a lot more of that. And I love that as a takeaway. Abreu, before we pivot to talk more about AI, I wanted to hear a little bit more from you about, you know, how do you help empower business leaders? What tactics do you find work best in marketing? Taking a step back from misinformation, it's one barrier they face, but there are so many others. Any real world examples you can point to?
I mean, very shortly, I think what a vibrant audience, first of all. Thrilled to be here. What I would say is authentic content mm-hmm. became so much more important. So we're very careful as a brand, the content we put out there. And then, of course, where it's positioned. I think the media plan used to be quite easy. When I first started working in marketing, media plan was an Excel table.
Yeah.
Now it's very complex. And I think this made us more aware of our own channels, this whole owned media channels and what we're putting out there. So if anything, I think the change we have is now more focus on our own channel and making sure that the content is positioned in our channels as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The power of owning your own message and also partnering when it makes sense with a partner who is really...
And our employees.
And your employees, yeah. Of course. Part of owned, right?
Yeah.
pivoting from that into AI, it would not be 2024 at a marketing conference if we did not devote at least 10 minutes to talking about artificial intelligence. So the data you have up on the screen is about this kind of gap that we see between those in power, right, leaders in business and policy saying, yes, I am working with AI in the workplace. We are actively experimenting. And their workforce, i.e. consumers, who only a third say self-reporting that they are using AI at work. So, Ibru, for you first, does it even matter if the end user recognizes that they are using tech enabled by AI?
Yeah, I mean, we look at it from all different angles. I think from a consumer lens, what we see is it's not for the sake of using, but what's the impact on them? And what are the benefits of AI for personal use? And then what are the threats as well? There's two sides to the coin. That's one aspect. The other thing is, there was a recent marketing study looking at use of Gen AI that Gartner actually is about to publish. So I've just heard 8 out of 10 CMOs expect positive impact to their marketing strategies mm-hmm. of Gen AI. When it comes to employees, 40% of them feel the threat, and they either see their job will change or they need to upskill, right? 40% of us, this includes everyone. When it comes to consumers, though, they are after the impact to society. And 82%, and this is US data, but 82% say they're not interested because they don't see the benefit of AI, Gen AI, to the society. So it's an interesting angle. Now, can I continue more?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, we've been looking at Vodafone Business at businesses and what makes them successful. And I want to bring a new angle to AI because I think trust is a critical component. And a lot of the businesses, first of all, 59% of businesses that we surveyed globally, they think trust is a critical driver for growth, is a priority. But when it comes to how do they manifest trust, it's the use of technology. And recently, we've done a research, a global one. In 10 markets, we interviewed 2,400 businesses and decision makers in those businesses, but also interviewed more than 5,000 consumers and users of these businesses. And what we saw is there is an important trust gap, meaning businesses score themselves as 83%, whereas businesses, consumers, their customers think 72%. So there's 11 points. And there are differences in industries, interestingly. The biggest gap is in healthcare, followed by retail. So there are differences in industries. Well, what we did in that research is we also defined the definition of trust and use of technology together with London School of Economics. And what we looked at is what are the components of trust and how businesses rate themselves and how their consumers rate themselves. And it's all about consistency, safety, data safety, what are they doing with my data? Okay. And am I willing to rely on that brand? Is the brand able to solve my problem? So lots of key learnings. So we will launch our own research next month. So this is a sneak preview for our audience. It's called Fit for the Future, Trust in Technology. So lots of correlations.
Yeah, I actually want to unpack that last bit about the power of brand. If everyone has an AI story to tell, right? There were, 20 panels today about AI? There are many tech brands, non-tech brands out there telling their AI story. How do you know if your brand's point of view on AI is resonating? What are the signals that your marketing is working?
Yeah, as I said, it's how you, first of all, what you do with your customers' data. Mm. And are you transparent? They want to know. So you have to be very authentic and transparent. The other piece is, as I said, it needs to be consistent. Across every touch point, they need to see it. And what are you doing when they have service issues? How are you responding? Mm-hmm. What's their experience? And the way they score you is they say, I want a brand that has a mutual benefit, which means I want to be able to recommend it to customers. They think they only recommend brands that they fully trust.
Fantastic. Phoebe, as we pivot to you to help us talk about the Washington Post's own journey with AI, a little bit more context I want to add to some of this data is that when we ask leaders who are in the 75%, those who say they're working with AI, they say that they think AI is going to help them with resource barriers related to staffing, budgets, time management, but they're very concerned that it's going to make communication and internal power structures maybe more difficult to navigate. So with those kind of guardrails in mind, can you tell us a little bit about where the Post is in, on our AI journey?
Yeah. So I'd say two things. I'm 4 months into the job that we've been figuring out. And one of them is, rather than just saying, okay, what are all of our problems and how can we tackle them with AI? We really paused and said, what are the user needs that are most critical right now? Both inside the organization, what are we hearing from journalists about the tools that they wish they had that they don't? What are we hearing from our readers about services, formats that they want to see and they expect to see that the Post isn't providing the speed? Mm-hmm. And then looking at those lists, how can we leverage AI, right? Because then you're using it intelligently as opposed to just slapping it as like, this is the solution to every single problem. There's things AI is quite good at, and then there's other things which, nice try, but it just can't actually, you know, get the job done. The other thing that we have been doing is, and this ties into your sort of point about kind of being consistent and labeling, because we all need to move fast, it's a great opportunity to pull together unexpected teams. Mm. So in the coming months, as the Post rolls out features that are powered by generative AI, you'll see that we're labeling them in a consistent way. And to arrive at that, we pulled together a working group from our product design team, our newsroom design team, our standards team, a random assortment of editors that I tapped and said, would you come to this? And we had 6 really productive meetings where we let design, we let standards conversations come from all different parts of the organization. And we arrived at consensus really quickly. And I think leaning on the power of your existing organization and pulling together unexpected teams, that's how we're going to be able to move with speed to leverage the technology.
I think that there's really, there's 2 interesting learnings from what you both have just shared. And one is that, you know, you have to keep audience needs first, right? We can't just throw technology at people for the sake of, hey, this shiny new thing is out there. Let's see what happens. But then the second thing about your intern, the power of your internal teams, right? What this gap here suggests is that top down isn't going to work, right? AI adoption and successful organizations are going to really see bottoms up support for AI applications. As we move on to the next one, this one is a bit of a bummer. This is the bummer insight, but I think that's an important grounding moment. And so to add some color to this, our research found that the average consumer feels powerless. 1 in 3 respondents said that they can't take action on any of the 29 issues that we presented to them. Phoebe, in this role and in your previous role, reflecting on both, how do you get people excited about topics and ideas that scare them?
I mean, I think first you want to draw them out a little bit more, right? You want to hear more about what their concern is and is there an opportunity there? To go back to the conversation we were having at the beginning around sort of misinformation and fear, one of the opportunities, so my last role was leading essentially our R&D team around younger audiences. And we started with user research and we found to our fascination that yes, there's a lot of fear of misinformation. Is this accurate? But younger audiences had developed fact-checking behavior. That's what we called it, right? So one of the things that we heard described to us over and over again is, well, if I see something online, I don't just trust it. I go and I read the comments or the replies or the dialogue that it has sparked online. Mm-hmm. That's a great moment, right? For us to engage with people in a space where they're already going to look to see, is this information accurate? That's an opportunity for our newsroom to go in and deliver the facts and give the background. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think, yes, you see, oh, they're worried about misinformation or they feel powerless. But what are they doing about that? And how can you engage them in that moment, I think, is an opportunity for journalism and I think for a lot of others as well.
Yeah, I love that this generation right? They're building in their own habits, but and also there's a lot of insights to be gleaned around how the, you know, your information diet is changing, and this generation is really going beyond traditional channels where you assume people go to search for information and casting a wider net. So it's more important than ever to really think about your media and marketing strategy accordingly. In the same way our journalists think about, you know, where do I need to be to reach the audience I'm trying to reach with the message they need. Our research also found that in addition to that, younger generations have also embraced what we call punitive actions over proactive engagement. And so what that is that respondents under 34 were twice as likely to tell us that they would rather boycott, change consumption habits, or protest in order to create change over voting or engage in other civic actions. And so, Mike, kind of building on our earlier conversation around authenticity, being vulnerable, how do you recommend brands engage this generation without coming across as dismissive or condescending?
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to give them, you have to give people something to buy into as opposed to just to buy. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good place to start. I mean, there's a really big backdrop here of significant challenges for a lot of people in the world at the minute. So, the idea that you've got someone who's struggling to put food on the table and sort of looking out the window and worrying about the world burning down around them, why are they not engaging with a $1 billion brand telling them how great it is, right? I mean, it doesn't make sense. Of course they're not engaging with it, but I actually think that, you know, consumers are probably more engaged than we give them credit for these days. And your own research shows, you know, you mentioned that they are sort of pretty ready to boycott brands to make a point. You know, it's because I think they have an implicit understanding now that they have some leverage in their wallet, mm-hmm. right? However big or little that is, there is some leverage there. To the extent that, you know, we are also forcing some companies to actually relook at their supply chains, to consider how they go about doing business. And these are really sort of significant things that come about because of consumer sort of pressure. So I actually think it's sort of pretty interesting. The thing about a brand is that, you know, at its best, it can act as a vehicle for people to get on board with and to support, and ultimately to take them to a future that potentially helps them move on from some of the problems that we're facing, you know, right now at its best. If you think about Patagonia, the outdoor clothing company, really interesting example of that, where they have placed the company into a trust to maintain its philosophy and values into the future. And beyond reinvesting what the company needs, you know, to keep it running, the profits are then diverted into various initiatives that help to protect the planet. Now, if you're focused on that issue, why would you not buy a Patagonia sort of outdoor jacket from Patagonia as opposed to a competitor brand, right? And I think that's the kind of thing. When you're buying something, you're not just buying an item. You are actually investing in a brand. You're supporting a brand and an organization that, you know, potentially is in a position and to sort of significantly move things forward and to create a change in the future. And that's a pretty kind of engaging way of seeing it. So I would say start there.
Yeah, really flipping the script on, you know, the idea that yes, you can boycott, but your wallet has power, and also in terms of how you spend it, not just what you don't spend on. We have a little bit of time left, and I think that we have, you know, a diverse audience here, all stages of careers and journeys, and so would love to hear from each of you. You know, what advice can you give emerging leaders in media and advertising and marketing? It's a challenging time, and each of you are well-respected leaders in your own spaces, so I'm sure this audience would love to hear some parting words of wisdom. April, can we start with you?
Sure. I'll start with Roy Amara, if you've heard of him, a futurist and scientist, said we tend to overestimate the impact of a new technology in the short run, but we underestimate in the long run. So I think there's that, first of all, on AI right now, is that I think it's time to really grasp it, to learn it, And, you know, we haven't really talked a lot about, but the data piece is so critical for businesses. I think if you're, for your company, do you have the right data? Because with AI, it's even 10 times more garbage out. So having your data, making sure that you learn, you develop yourself and your teams. So the right team and talent. And finally, build trust.
Wonderful. Phoebe?
This is the second job I've had at the Post where it's the first time someone's had the job and I've had to sort of justify what my job is and do the job at the same time. And I've been thinking a lot about that the first deck or the first talk that you give inside your company and figuring out how to tell that story to your colleagues and explain why this is critical and why they should invite you to the meeting. I think we undervalue that, right? Pausing for a beat and thinking, what does this audience need to hear from me in order to want to work with me going forward, right? And that works internally, but it also works externally.
Wonderful. Love it. Mike?
Yeah, I would say, be interested. Don't accept the status quo. And two further points around that, I suppose, just purely from a leadership point of view, is be clear on your purpose and then just be kind in how you execute getting there. I think those two things together are really important.
Awesome. And mine is support news. So with that, thank you all for joining us today. Download the report, let us know what you think, and have a rest of the day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @advertisingweek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcanda, the audio conference solution.